and welcome to the EP Energizer, a podcast from the CESA 6 Growth and Development Center. My name is Amy Bindis, and I'll be your host today. The intention of this podcast is to encourage school administrators to bring a high level of anabolic or uplifting energy to the important process of staff growth and development, so that we can all support each other and our students during the 2021 school year. Our focus today is on the School Administrator Performance Evaluation System, or SAEPS, Standard 4, Organizational Management. Managing your organization includes keeping up to date on rules and policies, supervising building activity, analyzing data to solve problems, allocating resources to maximize improvement, and do all of this while involving stakeholders in the process. During COVID-19, Strong and Associates have underscored the following nuances to these indicators for effective school leadership. Stays up to date on COVID-19 policies and procedures. Ensures capacity and social distance guidelines are enforced. Addresses issues related to COVID-19 in a systemic and timely fashion. And collaborates with stakeholders to identify and secure resources for support of school community during COVID-19. To say that it's been challenging to keep up with all of those regulations and policies that have resulted from the global pandemic is an understatement. You have had to keep abreast of new information, you've had to analyze data, you've had to allocate limited resources and include stakeholders in planning while keeping yourself and others safe. Without a clear process in place, many administrators have found themselves overwhelmed by even the seemingly small daily organizational decisions and merely surviving on lists, on post-it notes, and on caffeine. If, however, you have established a process for effectively and efficiently making different types of organizational decisions, you may be feeling a little less anxious. In this podcast, we will discuss how you can stay organized and proactive on decisions that are routine and how to respond effectively and efficiently with those decisions that are novel and we've never had to consider before. We will also discuss the short-term and the long-term implications of the decisions you make now. So in a quote-unquote normal school year, you would be beginning to consider the decisions regarding planning for next year, including staffing, budgeting, and scheduling. With the many unknowns this year, ultimate decisions may not be able to be made as they normally would, but what you can do is establish the process you will use in making these decisions. Laying the foundation of the process will help you and those you serve have more peace of mind. As Denise Rousseau puts in her October 2020 Science Direct Journal article, Making Evidence-Based Organizational Decisions in an Uncertain World, it's possible for human beings to become more comfortable with complexity and uncertainty by virtue of the ways decisions are made in organizations. Without these processes in place to consider all of the information coming at you, it may be difficult to keep it all straight in order to make the best organizational decisions for those you serve. Keep in mind that organizational decision-making differs from your personal and professional decision-making. Personal or professional decision-making means that you are the one affected. You as the individual and possibly those in your closest sphere might be impacted by your decision. Whereas organizational decision-making impacts many stakeholders. And your personal experience, your personal beliefs, and your personal biases may get in the way of making the best possible organizational decisions. A large group is impacted by an organizational decision, and many different beliefs and perspectives come into play. Just as the Effectiveness Project promotes getting the input of students in the classroom regarding their learning experience, and the school administrator getting that 360-degree feedback, we also promote gathering feedback of all stakeholders in the decision-making process as much as possible, so that as many implications on people are considered. Involving key stakeholder groups in the process leads to increased understanding and support for decisions as well. Rousseau asserts that this working in diverse groups prompts more deliberate thinking by exposing people to information that challenges existing beliefs. Effective organizational decision-making requires decision processes that outlive the decision-makers. If you or members of your staff left tomorrow, the stakeholders remaining would still need to live by those decisions made for the time being. So a process ensures that decision-making is both inclusive of viewpoints and deliberate in its enactment and communication. Now, we're not suggesting that every decision, every minute, goes through this process, but when you're aware of the differences between the types of decisions, the implications they may have, and the information needed, you'll be better equipped to manage your important work. So before looking at the processes involved, let's consider the three kinds of decisions that need to be made throughout the year: routine, non-routine, and truly novel or new. Routine decisions are those that are repetitive but clear in nature. Because they are known, it's easier to make adjustments to improve these decisions over time. Examples of routine decisions include how to manage teacher absences and substitute teachers, staff meeting agendas for professional learning, or information needing in weekly parent and community publications. Non-routine decisions occur less often. Normally, all of the information hasn't presented itself yet, but relevant information still exists, and there's probably a time factor to consider as well. These decisions may include staffing or budgeting, where as much information as possible is available, but it's really impossible to know everything at this time, and you still have to make the best decision you can. Finally, truly novel decisions are those where critical information doesn't exist because there's no historical data or evidence. Decisions on in-person versus virtual learning, designing new learning spaces, or completely redesigning program services require innovative thinking, along with input from a variety of sources. So now that we know the three types of decisions, let's discuss the decision-making process at work, no matter what type of decision you're facing. Each decision, although unique to itself, benefits from a similar process. The length, the breadth, and depth of the process are the variables. Routine decisions are usually made quickly, although the process still requires regular reflection to ensure the intended outcomes are being realized. Non-routine decisions allow for a longer period of data collection. And novel decisions demand the sourcing of input from many stakeholders. As we look at the process in detail, think about the nuances you need to be aware of during the course of the school year with the vast array of the decisions that you have to make. Joachim Ahlstrom, author of How to Succeed with Continuous Improvement, likens the decision-making process toward improvement to orienteering. He says, "You cannot make improvement if you do not know where you are at the moment and if you don't have a clear target." Orienteering requires a map or a compass, or for you to know where you are and for you to know where you're going. So let's keep in mind the need to have a clear end goal. Another concept we'll consider is that of upstream thinking. Thinking upstream originated in the nursing industry over 30 years ago and has been formalized by many, including Dan Heath in his latest book, Upstream: The Quest to Solve Problems Before They Happen. The concept of upstream thinking looks to consider the root cause of an issue or problem when making decisions, as the root cause may be further upstream than you thought. For example, if you live on a river and you're finding many dead fish washing up on your shore, instead of devising a more efficient way to capture the dead fish, investigate what might be causing the fish to die in the first place, upstream. So now that we've got the concepts of knowing where we're going along the journey of continuous improvement and understanding the need to get at the root cause of problems, let's discuss the processes you need to assist you and your staff in making the best organizational decisions possible. If you're listening as you're driving or working out, you may want to review this section later with a paper and pen in hand. So most decision-making processes follow the continuous improvement cycle, similar to plan, do, study, act. The steps I will summarize here include the work of Ahlstrom, Baldridge, Rousseau, Deming, and even Schuert, as they stand on the shoulders of those that came before them. As we go through these steps, we will consider example situations along the way. So step one, plan. In this step, you've got three things to do. Number one, determine where you are and what the end goal is or where you are going. Number two, analyze the problem. And number three, analyze the activities related to the problem to ensure that you're focused on the right problem. For example, if your problem is finding effective coverage for teachers who are out ill, you must first define what your end goal of effective coverage looks like, and then think upstream to solve the right problem. Is the problem you're addressing the volume of staff calling in sick? Is it the structure or the logistics of the coverage needed? Or is it a substitute teacher shortage? If in fact it's all three, you must attack one issue at a time. Within this planning phase, you can't shy away from any politics involved. Acknowledge and address any and all contributing factors. You may want to employ the SWOT analysis, and that considers the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats associated. When analyzing activities related to the problem, use information that's both easy and available, as well as difficult to obtain. For example, if the problem is finding enough substitute teachers for coverage as there's a shortage, ask for ideas from current employees, ideas from substitute staff, and outside resources, including neighboring districts and even CESAs. Research how districts nationwide are dealing with the issue and identify the needed skills needed to fulfill the course instructional requirements. Determine what other staff members may have these skills. Then swim upstream in your own environment. Find out why qualified local community members aren't wanting to become substitute teachers. If the word on the street is that subbing in your school or district is unappealing, find out why. Step number two is do. As you wrap up the planning and analysis phase, you will determine possible next steps. Generate as many alternatives as possible. The Baldridge language for this innovation, is innovation management. Encourage yourself and your staff to think outside of the box and generate ideas that have never been tried. Before engaging in the action, however, determine what indicators you will use to determine success. Understand how it is that you know whether you picked the right solution. So if you find out that many members of your community think that your school or district doesn't have a handle on student classroom behavior management, investigate if this is a perception or a reality, and create a plan not only to address the issue, but to communicate that, in fact, being a substitute in your district is very rewarding. You get training on making connections with students, and you get training on classroom management and working with the teacher in conjunction with the administration. Maybe even get testimonials from substitutes on their experiences with students and staff. Then set success indicators at this step. If increasing the number of substitute teachers is important to you, set the indicator of recruiting, training, and surveying a certain number of substitute teachers, and then finding out their satisfaction by a particular date. We're now ready to move to step three, study. Even though this step is entitled study, it refers to studying the implications of the decision you've made by looking at the success indicators you identified at the end of step two. Gathering information from a variety of sources is critical here. There may be unintended consequences of your decision. How will you find that out? Are the results what you hoped for? Why or why not? Gather input from those affected by the decision to learn as much as you can. In regards to our substitute teacher situation, study the results of the substitute satisfaction survey. Look at the recruitment and training numbers. Find out what has worked and why, as well as what hasn't worked and why. So having planned, having done, and having studied, we reach step four, act. You may be thinking, how is this step of act different from the second step of do? In the second step of plan, do, study, act, you've implemented one or more ideas that you're testing out to see if it is or is not the right final decision. Once determined that it is the direction you want your organization to go, you're ready to formalize the improvement to the organization. It is now that attention is paid to the details of supporting the decision and allowing for channels of communication that will keep you and your staff informed of the positive as well as any negative implications of the final decision, both now and in the future. These formal improvements should also enhance culture and forward the integrity and collaborative spirit of your leadership. Maybe you've identified a new recruitment strategy for substitute teachers. Or maybe it's been determined that a formalized training and indoctrination process should occur on a regular basis. Not all decisions have the luxury of time. When making decisions on a daily basis, you may need to go through a mini process of plan, do, study, act by gathering different viewpoints and considering different possibilities as quickly as possible. Knowing what you want the ultimate decision to look like, or where you're going, and thinking about potential root causes of problems that you may encounter is important to keep in consideration no matter what kind of issue you have. Effectively managing an organization involves purposeful, intentional, and collaborative process that ensure decisions are made in the best interest of all. Although post-it notes, to-do lists, and caffeine can assist you on a daily basis, they can't compare to a sound decision-making process when deployed with intention. Managing your organization is not as easy this year as it has been in other years, and it's never easy. But thank you for the important work you do. As always, we are here at the CISA 6 Growth and Development Center for any reason you might have to support, inspire, influence, and empower you.